The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. Just between us. Hey.
Just between us. Hey. Hello! I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, mental health advocate, and I've recently added one new step to my skincare routine.
Hey, I'm Gabe Dunn. I'm a writer, bi-con, bisexual icon, wink, and reality TV fan.
Ooh.
What's the step?
This Osei, serum, seaweed serum, perhaps?
Ooh.
Their stuff when we promoted them on the podcast. And so I used the body oil right away. I used, the body cream right away because that's stuff I'm used to. I know how to do that, you know?
Right.
But then there was this kind of greenish seaweed serum for the face. And you know me, I'm always afraid to add things to my face because I have sensitive skin. But I looked at it recently and I was like, I don't know, seems nice.
Serums, you're supposed to use serums, I guess.
Yeah. And I was like, maybe let me give it a little go. Really lovely. Rub it on, give it a little time before I add my moisture. You should see my text messages. It's just me texting Sarah Collins being like, how do you put eye cream on?
Oh, well, she's extremely cool is the thing.
I know.
She's very cool. I don't know if she knows that she's cool, but she's a person that you meet and you're like, that's a cool person.
I know, right? I think she would be shocked at how cool we think she is.
She's got little outfits, she's dressed always so fun and funky. She's a cool girl.
Yeah. If I could have anyone's style, I think I'd want hers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe one day.
I also like how Rachel and Sean dress. I guess, you know what? Sean. I would dress like Sean.
Well, this is Just Between Us, a variety show filled with heartfelt advice.
Ridiculous games.
And brutal honesty, but not very good fashion advice.
No, not at all. Although I've been dressing more 70s looking out at the bars. And nobody else is dressed like me, but I just have to get over the hump of that's fine.
What does that mean? You're wearing loud prints?
Yeah, prints or pants that are brown or maroon, more sort of a little bit of a 70s look. And, out in WeHo, everyone's wearing black. So I'm just sort of trying to stand out, maybe.
It's so funny. Whenever I put on a cool piece of clothing, I went shopping when my parents were in town. So I got some stuff John didn't see. And I came out wearing this little sweater jacket thing. And he was like, what is that? That's very cool. Aww. He can't believe that I bought a cool thing without him.
Well, he's a prep.
Yeah. So he's very fashion forward in a way I am not.
Yeah, but he's got a preppy sort of style. He's fashion forward in a boat shoes, kind of Hank cool guy at the tennis club sort of look.
But he bought all these wide pants because I guess male wide pants are in style now. One pair, he took him a few weeks for him to even let me see them because he knew I would hate them so much.
Wow. This is my ex hated that I wore bell bottoms. Absolutely hated it. And I was a girl.
I just have very, very simple tastes when it comes to male clothing.
Mm.
And so when he does more fashionable, trendy things that aren't traditional, I don't like it.
Poor baby.
But he knows that, and I wear stuff he doesn't like. He wishes I was in high heels every day. Good luck.
Oh my God. No way. No way, bro. Wait, can we share your exciting news?
Oh, yes. Okay. So if anyone who listens to the show still watches us on YouTube, because by the way, we're on YouTube once a week on Thursdays, check it out. We did an episode with my husband, John, and we were talking about my obsession with Louise Penny's Inspector Gamache novels and how I'm only really allowed to read them during a certain times of the year because otherwise it takes over my whole personality and I'm obsessed with Inspector Gamache and all of these things. And then one of our amazing listeners, I guess, forwarded the video to her mom, who's a big Louise Penny fan. And then her mom sent it to Louise Penny herself. And Louise Penny not only watched the video, but then included the video in her February newsletter.
It's the best thing that's ever happened.
I was freaking out.
It's so awesome.
That, like, my favorite author watched my silly little video with my husband and was like, ah, I'll send this out.
And, like, it was so cool because I saw the message about it first. So I got to send it to you. And then you were like, ah!
I was freaking out. I was like, I, like, convinced myself. I was like, I bet just her assistant watched it. Like, there's no way she actually watched it. But then when I, like, went to look at the newsletter and it was there, I was like, she must have watched it. She put it in her newsletter.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So never give up and have mom send content out.
Yeah. It's very sweet that the mom did that. It's very mom.
I love it. I love everything about it. And I'm now going to retire.
We're going to start the Louise Penny cast.
A what?
The Louise Penny cast, a podcast just about Louise Penny.
Oh my God. Gabe.
Why don't you do a Gamache cast?
Why
don't you do Gamache
write in
cast?
And let us know if anyone would be interested in that.
Every week you interview Louise Penny, it's sort of like Oprah magazine.
Well, before I do that, I guess I should finish this episode, which is actually very fun and exciting.
Oh yeah, we have a fantastic guest, Lila Raptopoulos, who's here to talk all about culture.
And later we're going to be talking about sensory sensitivity. Because I have it.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you all about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Right before I found out about this project, my mom made an offhand comment about wanting to write a memoir because she had such a wild childhood and there are all these things she's never really talked to us about. But asking someone to sit down and write a memoir is kind of daunting. So then I got her mylifeinabook.com and now she's getting prompts to answer on a weekly basis and it's a lot easier than just undertaking an entire memoir. I'm so excited to see what my mom does with mylifeinabook.com because she's someone who doesn't always feel comfortable just sharing about herself, but having these prompts and knowing that I really want to hear her answers is going to inspire her to probably share more with me about her life and her upbringing than I've ever been shared with before. So I'm so excited for that. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code JUSTBETWEENUS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. Use code JUSTBETWEENUS for 10% off today.
Has dealing with stress and trying to get more focused a New Year's resolution you haven't cracked yet or don't really know how to fix? I have a lot of trouble staying focused and I also get super stressed out and I think the not being able to stay focused really dovetails with that. So if there was a way for me to keep my focus that didn't also cause my brain to get so scattered with stress, I would love to be able to fix it. I sometimes can't focus on the task at hand because I'm so busy realizing that there are things I need to do on the Just Between Us Instagram account. So I'll be like fully writing something and all of a sudden my brain will go, JBU Instagram, have to post on social media. Truvaga is a handheld product that stimulates the vagus nerve to improve overall health and wellness. Stimulating the vagus nerve with Truvaga helps to balance and strengthen the nervous system, which reduces stress, increases focus, improves mood, and improves sleep. Truvaga is owned by ElectroCore and uses its patented technology for overall health and wellness benefits. Its utilized technology is the most clinically studied and tested vagus nerve therapy available. Customizable sessions are only 2 minutes long. Recommended usage is one session in the morning and one at night. Truvaga comes programmed with 350 sessions, which, if used twice a day, will last approximately 6 months. It's drug-free and easy-to-use therapy to help improve your health. No app or phone is required. We offer free standard shipping, payment plan options, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's only available in the U.S. at this time. Visit Truvaga.com, T-R-U-V-A-G-A.com, and enter promo code JUSTBETWEENUS to enhance your wellness journey, support this podcast, and receive $15 off. That's T-R-U-V-A-G-A.com. Check out promo code JUSTBETWEENUS.
Hi, everyone. Allison here. Anyone who knows me well knows that I love to read. I am always looking for new books, and that is why I am so excited that this episode is sponsored by Book of the Month. Book of the Month's mission is to help readers discover new books they love and to promote the work of emerging authors. It was so fun for me to get to pick which book I wanted to read this month and have it shipped right to my door. Book of the Month makes it easy to decide which book to read next. Each month, the editorial team reads through hundreds of new titles. They pick some of the best new books for you to choose from. All the books are good, so you can't go wrong. Every aspect of the Book of the Month experience is designed to be fun and special for readers. They have a highly anticipated release at the beginning of each month. Books are delivered in this really adorable bright blue box, and there's a fun app to help you pick your book and track your reading process. They also offer great values on new release hardcover fiction. It's much cheaper than other options, shipping is always free, and with a loyalty program, you get rewards and even lower prices the longer you stay as a member. My first book from Book of the Month was The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. I am tearing through this book. It is so fun. It's basically about this woman who one day comes home and there's a husband in her apartment, and she's like, "Where did you come from?" And then she figures out that every time her new husband goes into the attic, a new husband comes out, and she's like shuffling through all these different husbands from the attic trying to figure out which one is the best. It is right up my alley, and I love it so much. So if you want to take part in Book of the Month and have a brand new book shipped right to your door every single month, go to bookofthemonth.com and get your first book for $5 with code PETALS. That's $5 off with code PETALS. I cannot recommend this enough. Just Between Us. Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for the juiciest, most scandalous, most controversial segment known to all of podcasting, Tough Questions.
This week on the show, we have Lila Raptopoulos. She is the host of Life and Art from FT Weekend, the arts and culture podcast from the Financial Times, and a culture writer. Hello.
Hi, Gabe. Hi, Allison.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. I'd love to start by asking, what is culture?
Oh, God. Start easy. Culture is so many things. I mean, I think a lot about like my cultures, the cultures that I am. I'm Greek and Armenian. I think about that a lot. In the context of the show, culture, we think about it as like the art and the things that are produced that people are consuming, that's making them think about their place in the world and how to live a good life and how to live a meaningful life. And I guess art that people are reflecting themselves in and are reflecting back at. Does that make sense? Is that, ooh.
Isn't it funny you can spend your whole life working on something and then it's like, but what is it? And it's like, I'm not sure.
It's too big. It's really too big of a word. It's like it's kind of a beautiful word and also too big of a word. What do you think?
Well, I always make a joke where I'm like, my culture is walking around an indoor mall. Like, that's me. Like, I was like, you have to respect this. This is my culture.
It's like food and language and music and like family structures. And, you know, it's interesting to hear it reflected back to you because I think it does, or art that reflects back to you, but I think it does encompass like the decade or the year that you're part of it. So like totally. The culture of, you know, you can still be, let's say, I'm Jewish, you could still be Jewish, but being Jewish in the 60s is different than Jewish in the 90s is different than, so like it, and different in, you know, Morocco versus, you know, the Americas versus like Australia. Like, so there's like, you're right that it encompasses like so much.
Yeah, it's kind of everything.
But one part of your job is sort of like predicting trends and like where culture is heading. And how does that come into play? Like, how do you start to like put those pieces together to see like what's coming next?
I think that predicting where culture is going is a really hard thing. And often when we try to do it, we're wrong. but when we do it, often we do once a year, a colleague and I come together on the show and we talk about where we think culture is going to go in the following year. And we ask our listeners where they think culture is going in the following year and any predictions that they have. And we find through that, that often when we look back at the year past, we're mostly wrong. But I think like what the fun thing about the exercise is to sort of like look at what we're watching right now and what we're reading and what sort of like our society is kind of like glommed onto and wanted to talk about and asked if that is saying something about us and the political moment and some social moment or if it's just a passing blip.
I mean, I think of it as like noticing patterns. So like mm-hmm. I'll often, I don't know if this is like just a way that I think, but like I'll notice, oh, that we just passed four people wearing the same color. And mm-hmm. I often think that nobody cares. Like I am the person who's like, well, we just saw the same car three times. And the person I'm with is often like, okay. And I'm like, okay, sorry. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, or maybe it's being sold to us in the sense that like my algorithm just showed me four videos of girls wearing capri pants. Are right. capri pants back?
Right.
Maybe, but also right. maybe like I just got four videos in a row and you know, that's the algorithm showing me that because someone paid to be like, show mm-hmm. my pants. Mm-hmm.
I know. Or, you know, an overall company is like, overalls are so in right now.
Exactly.
And how many times do we have to say it for it to actually become in right now? I think
yeah.
it's kind of an interesting question. There's like a lot of, you know, the way that things become popular have changed so much too. Like sometimes we have, you know, I'm at the Financial Times and we, despite our name, we have a very big sort of arts and culture section, which has like, we have fashion editors and arts editors and film reviewers and food critics that we have on the show a lot and that I talk to a lot. And it's funny to talk to someone like a fashion editor who's been doing their job for 20 or 30 years. And 20 years ago, the way that something got cool was the way it says in The Devil Wears Prada, you know, we decided 2 years ago that this color was going to be in. And so suddenly everyone's wearing this color. And now it's like, it's coming from below. It's coming from the sides. Like what becomes cool is not anything that people can really like wrap their hands around. There's no one answer.
And I also feel like because everyone's For You page is different, what people mm-hmm. think is cool is different. And like what, you know, bubble you're in and what like content you're exposed to. It's like Gabe was saying, one person could be like, everyone's wearing capri pants. And someone else could be like, no one's wearing pants anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, but stick around.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Has dealing with stress and trying to get more focused a New Year's resolution you haven't cracked yet or don't really know how to fix? I have a lot of trouble staying focused and I also get super stressed out and I think that not being able to stay focused really dovetails with that. So if there was a way for me to keep my focus that didn't also cause my brain to get so scattered with stress, I would love to be able to fix it. I sometimes can't focus on the task at hand because I'm so busy realizing that there are things I need to do on the Just Between Us Instagram account. So I'll be like fully writing something and all of a sudden my brain will go, JBU Instagram, have to post on social media. Truvaga is a handheld product that stimulates the vagus nerve to improve overall health and wellness. Stimulating the vagus nerve with Truvaga helps to balance and strengthen the nervous system, which reduces stress, increases focus, improves mood, and improves sleep. Truvaga is owned by ElectroCore and uses its patented technology for overall health and wellness benefits. Its utilized technology is the most clinically studied and tested vagus nerve therapy available. Customizable sessions are only 2 minutes long. Recommended usage is one session in the morning and one at night. Truvaga comes programmed with 350 sessions, which, if used twice a day, will last approximately 6 months. It's drug-free and easy-to-use therapy to help improve your health. No app or phone is required. We offer free standard shipping, payment plan options, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's only available in the U.S. at this time. Visit Truvaga.com, TRUVAGA.com, and enter promo code JUSTBETWEENUS to enhance your wellness journey, support this podcast, and receive $15 off. That's TRUVAGA.com. Check out promo code JUSTBETWEENUS. And we're back. I do think a lot of it also comes from, and it continues to come from, like, and I'm talking about, I guess, like fashion and makeup from like different marginalized groups who then all of a sudden white people get a hold of it. And now it's fashion. And right. I did like an episode of my show, Bad with Money, about FUBU and Damon John. And I like looked into the rise and fall of FUBU. And it was very much like streetwear by like, you know, black people, obviously for us, by us. And then it got into LL Cool J Ward in a Gap commercial. And then it got like brought to white people and it ends with NSYNC wearing FUBU on the red carpet, I think, of the MTV Awards. And like that to me is just like a trend in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just actually thinking about Sean John, the brand.
Yeah.
Yesterday, another example of white people wearing Sean John. I know. I have been thinking recently, though, about how this year or over the past, over the past 12 months, so not this calendar year, people have seemed to kind of be craving some semblance of, the word monoculture is a silly one, but some semblance of like all experiencing the same thing together more than in past years. It's like even in the obsession with Taylor Swift and her boyfriend, or the obsession with Barbie and Oppenheimer and pairing them together, I'm not really sure if that will continue, but there was something kind of fun about I was missing everybody reading the same book. I was like missing a little bit, a lot of people talking about the same piece of art, even though I'm not sure. I've had a lot of fun talking about Taylor Swift and her boyfriend so much. I do. Something kind of sweet about, there's something kind of sweet about people seeming to want to be on the same page.
Seinfeld finale.
I don't know. What do you think? Yeah.
It's Seinfeld finale. Wanting to experience something together. This who the fuck did I marry TikTok thing that's happening. I don't know if you've got onto that.
No.
There's a woman on TikTok who's been doing, I think it's up to like 50 or 60 parts, where she's talking about her marriage and the way that she got like scammed and this like terrible story. But it's like, I mean, it's sort of like the Zola story where everyone was following it on Twitter.
Yep.
And like this kind of long storytelling where she's giving this like part, you know, in 50 parts. And it's like, I thought it was a TV show at first when I was hearing about it. And then I ended up realizing that it was TikToks. And then now there's like actress friends of mine who are like me auditioning to play the lead in the Who the Fuck Did I Marry movie. Like, and it's like a thing that it's like now there's content about the content.
Yeah, yeah. And like there's something, don't you miss suspense a little bit? There's something about an episodic thing where you're like, I can't wait. I just remember being a kid and just not feeling on a Sunday night after watching a show like, I can't wait for another week.
Yeah.
I don't feel that very often anymore.
I'm only feeling that about Love is Blind season 6.
Oh my God. I know. They're really taunting us.
I'm on the edge of my goddamn seat about that.
Me too.
But I am like curious, like, what do you feel like in the last, because now we're recording this towards the end of February. Like, what do you feel like in the last like year, like in 2023, early 2024, like culturally in terms of like, you know, a movie, a book, like a TV show has like really captured the culture and maybe influenced, I don't want to say copycats, but influenced like a change in things that come after it, like where you see like, oh, this has maybe shifted the way we tell story or the way the dialogue is said. Like, what has there been anything that stands out like that?
That's a really good question. I feel like often by the time we get things, because the cycle of publishing a book is so long and the cycle of creating a film is so long, by the time we get things, they've been in the works for like 2-3 years. We read a book recently on the show called 14 Days. And it was this experimental novel that Margaret Atwood and John Grisham and all these sort of writers, Celeste Ng and Dave Eggers. Anyway, everybody wrote a different chapter of this book. And it seemed like, whoa, this is kind of an interesting new thing that could change the way we think about how literature is written. And so it was just a collaborative novel, and they each wrote a different book. And it turns out that they wrote it in the depths of COVID, of lockdown. Mm. And it came out now, and we read it, and we thought, hey, this could maybe make us think differently, or this could be an experiment that, like, leads to new experiments. But it felt dated. It felt like, you know, by the time it got to us.
The immediacy isn't there.
Yeah, the immediacy isn't there. So it's a good question. Do you have any that you've thought about, that you've been thinking about as you were?
I think pairing stuff, like the Barbenheimer situation, yeah. I think. But even that, like, how do you replicate that, I guess? It was so authentic.
I feel like Tim Robinson, I Think You Should Leave, has, like, heavily influenced comedy in a really mm-hmm. big way. In, like, yes. a way that, like, maybe we haven't seen since, like, Anchorman or something.
Yes. Where
he has, like, created a tone of speaking and a type of character that mm-hmm. like permeates like any kind of situation, you know, mm-hmm. like you just like you people won't even realize they're like doing a Tim Robinson impression yes. in the middle of a conversation, but they mm-hmm. are, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So it's sort of seeped in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's mm-hmm. at least for the contingent of us that love and worship it, it's changed my speaking patterns.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. I haven't thought about. I'm sure there are a number of things that have sort of like seeped into me in ways I haven't really realized.
I mean, The Office, the mockumentary TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
But now that feels like, dated. Oh, we've seen that. Like, you know, but like that's a great example where like that then shifted what TV looked like. Like,
yeah. We watched Something's Gotta Give, you know, that old Nancy Meyers film.
Yes.
We kind of rewatched it. And, like, it was woof in some ways. And it was also sort of comforting in some ways. But a lot of things that felt very trite, we realized, oh, they might have actually been the first ones to do it.
Right? That's the thing.
So you can't go, you know. We watched Halloween, too. And we thought, wow, this is, like, so slow. And the scare tactics are. And then you realized, oh, I think they invented that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I think a lot about the trend of in the 80s of like alien movies where aliens were portrayed in all these different ways and like how we locked that down. And I always think about like John Carpenter's The Thing, which later became like a cult classic. And I don't know if you mm-hmm. guys have talked about cult classics on the show, but like the idea of something hitting much later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that movie came out and it's again like one of the top horror movies of all time, and it bombed because it opened on the same weekend as E.T. and E.T. was an immediate hit, an immediate phenomenon. And so at that moment in time in the culture, aliens were cute. We right. wanted cute aliens. We wanted right. You know, the E.T. knockoff Mac and Me, which came out later. We wanted like, you know, adorable aliens. And we were not here as a culture for scary aliens.
Mm.
And so that movie, nobody wanted it until like, you know, much later when people were like, this is actually a very good horror movie. But like stuff that hits, that's like before its time or that hits, you know, later is so interesting
yeah.
to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, another thing this makes me think of a little bit is Miyazaki movies.
Oh, Spirited Away, stuff like
Spirited
that.
Spirited Away. And I watched with my, he came out with his most recent movie,
Boy and the
in
Heron.
January or December, Boy and the Heron. Yeah.
Yeah.
My niece is 5 and we put on Totoro for her this summer. She doesn't have like a very long attention span, but she just, it's a very slow movie. It's a very weird movie. And she just locked in and didn't sort of just accepted everything as it came and had this like kind of transcendent little experience. It was like really fun to watch her and then watch her remember it. And when I watched The Boy and the Heron, I thought, okay, this is like an animator that does really, really unique stuff that's now like heralded as this person that really like pushes at the edges of what makes sense mm-hmm. in a way that like our culture accepts because we think that he's a genius. And I guess I would have thought that it would have created more, not copycats, but more stuff like it Yeah, that there would be more weirdos making animated films that like had the same visibility that that his does. But I don't know. It's kind of interesting that it hasn't.
I mean, I'm wondering, too, with everything we're talking about, it, again, is extremely white. Like, I wonder if Miyazaki doesn't hit as hard because it's Asian. Or like, you know, there's certain things that don't hit as hard for us. But meanwhile, I think among fans of like, you know, Asian animation, I mean, he's the king. Like,
yeah,
I think there's different, that's what's broken up now is there's different cultures of different things. And there always was. But the predominant culture is like Friends or like, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then other stuff is deemed as Black culture, Asian culture, you know, like the majority of trends, you know, let's say the trend of very thin eyebrows, the trend of, you know, like it comes up from like the street and then down from celebrities who copy the street.
You know what I mean? Right.
To like some middle group, the Anne Hathaways of Devil Wears Prada. It's basically us.
There is something there, especially because the people in positions of power who are making the decisions are creating content that looks sort of like them and we're used to that and we are sort of consuming it. It probably does make sense that an animator, a Japanese animator like Miyazaki, who's when you're watching, often you're reading subtitles, there really is only like space in America for one of them. I was thinking that I was interviewing the author Viet Thanh Nguyen for a profile that I'm doing for later this week. And he said that that Americans read only 3% of literature. Oh, I might need to pull this up. But it's something like only 3% of literature that's like sold or read in America is translated literature, that the vast majority of what we're reading is written in English. So really, almost everything that we're getting, I'm sure those numbers are pretty similar for films and that sort of thing. So like almost everything we're getting from the point of view of ourselves. And there's not a huge amount of like space in that diet without us really trying otherwise for more. So I don't know. It's if I find it really interesting, like which films break through that are in other languages, which books break through that are translated. It's almost, it's so rare.
If you want to hear the rest of this episode, and let me tell you, you do, head over to patreon.com/justbetweenus. And for $3 a month, you can get access to all of our podcast episodes in full ad-free.
You can also get merch for this podcast at justbetweenuspod.com or allisonraskinexposed.com.
Okay, that's it. Tatalatitu.
Tatalatitu.